Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Conley, Judge Smith, Judge Bratfold, the Honorable Francis J. Conley presiding.
Thank you. Let's all be seated. Our first case this morning is the State of Minnesota versus Jimmy Lee Campbell, file number 823-0713. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone. The podium goes up and down. And just adjust it to your level. And just please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Joseph G. Vaccaro. I represent Jimmy Lee Campbell, the appellate in this matter. This is a fairly concise issue. I doubt I'm going to take all 15 minutes, but it presents the court with a question of statutory interpretation and really what to do when the state seeks to avoid the prohibition that Minnesota Statute 626.15 places on extensions of search warrants for anything other than a financial institution. Now, I say that Minnesota Statute 626.15 places a prohibition on the issuance of an extension for a search warrant on anything but financial institutions because of the plain language of the statute. The legislature very clearly contemplated what kinds of warrants could be extended beyond the 10 days which they have gone stale, and it limited that to financial institutions. If there was, I think it's best to think of these extensions as a continued request to search on the same set of facts. And if it was going to be sufficient in the minds of the legislature for such a request to be made, there would be no need for this extension process. A officer could simply submit an affidavit to the court identical to that which was previously submitted and have a second warrant issued. The state is playing semantics here in trying to get around the 10-day staleness requirement established by the statute. There needs to be a test, and I propose one, that separates an extension from a warrant from a second warrant. And that test is basically, does this officer, the attesting officer, provide the court with a minimal amount of information from which the court can independently determine that the conditions in the first warrant still exist and there is some likelihood that the contraband will still be located in the place where it's sought. That didn't happen here with Mr. Campbell. The second warrant is identical to the first in all but two very minor respects, neither of which refresh the information contained in the warrant. The first way it's different heightens the fact that this warrant is stale. Officers attest that for 2 weeks they've attempted to locate Mr. Campbell as well as his car in Ramsey County and have been unable to do so. The second way is completely irrelevant as to whether the facts remain fresh or stale. It's just simply the fact that the officer has confirmed that the deceased in the drug overdose being investigated in Olmsted County has now been definitively declared to have died of a drug overdose. Neither of those two facts allow the court to independently determine whether there remains any likelihood that any contraband would be found in the vehicles named in the warrant or on Mr. Campbell himself. Officers could have simply approached the court and supplemented their warrant request with facts such as the vehicles remain registered in the name of Mr. Campbell's girlfriend, Mr. Campbell continues to list the residence in St. Paul as his home, et cetera, et cetera. This requirement that new facts be pled also, as I say in my brief, protects the interests of the public. Within 10 days, the sorts of things that are...
You know, why would we assume that had changed? You said they've got a... The two events from the 28th of April and June 24th, they're the two events. And you're saying for the new warrant, they had to allege that additional fact. But why which I think you said, you know, the car is still registered, nothing's changed. Why would we assume things have changed? Why?
Well, in this case, you would. There's a reason to assume things have changed. It's simply that they've been unable to locate Mr. Campbell in the county for 2 weeks, despite having looked for them. I think that.
But why would that suggest the car is now registered in someone else's name?
It would suggest that it may not suggest.
I mean, does it suggest that he's on the run and they can't find him? I mean, that speaking for myself and not my treasured colleagues, that's what I get out of it, as opposed
sure.
to, oh, well, now, you know, he's doing all these things to, you know, put it off on someone else. I mean, I don't, that seems illogical to me, but that's just
so,
me.
So I what I'm trying to say is that we have, the state has a problem because when that first warrant was signed, it had 10 days to execute it. And after 10 days, per the statute, that warrant became void. Then when we look at the legislative intent, we see that if the state couldn't get an extension of that warrant because that warrant was not for financial institutions. And as I stated earlier, we have to ask ourselves, what does this implicit prohibition on extensions mean? An extension, like I said, I think is simply described as a request to search on the same set of facts. The question in the warrant also presented, the question upon issuing a warrant presented to the court is also not whether the contraband will be in the place where they're looking for it, but whether the contraband is even within the county wherein the court is looking. If they had submitted this warrant and if they'd submitted a request for a warrant and said, we've located Mr. Campbell in, say, Hennepin County and submitted it to a Ramsey County judge, it would be similarly invalid. So really what we're looking at here is the legislature has established this statute as a means of keeping the government accountable and as a means of ensuring that warrants don't issue in perpetuity, that there's not a warrant for a car that was once owned by Mr. Campbell, that they just simply approach the court with the same affidavit on time and time again till some 40 days later or 50 days later or 60 days later without having done any continued work to track down Mr. Campbell or whoever it may be to figure out where they actually are, what items actually remain in their control, where they actually live, where this contraband may actually be located.
Can I ask counsel? So it looks like the first warrant was sought on June 30th.
Correct.
And then the second one on July 15th. About the June 30th warrant, obviously there's no argument about it being stale. The information in it stale. I understand your statutory argument, but the July 15th, I don't see you make any argument that on the face of it, but in other words, but for the previous warrant, you aren't making an argument that the information is stale. In other words, if there had not been a previous warrant, it would be fine if they had asked on July 15th.
In case you're wondering, that's a trap.
Well, it's maybe that, but also a question.
I think the two are bound together. The way I conceive of it is that after July 9th or whatever day that first warrant went stale, the government found itself with a stale warrant supported by facts that had the facts themselves had gone stale, and that the government did not do anything in addition to try to locate Mr. Campbell, try to figure out why they couldn't find him, and try to determine whether or not he was even within Ramsey County. So to me, they lead into one another, and a stale warrant under my test is stale because it expired after the 10 days. So again, I think that the real question before us is what do we do when the state, in order to avoid an extension, proceeds under the concept of a second warrant issued on facts that have already gone stale pursuant to the statute. And I think we just simply have to declare that an improper extension, as was done in the Meyer case.
You know, in the Myers case, though, which I have in front of me, that just seems to be very different. I mean, it was, you know, the first incident was 11 months and then 2 months. I mean, here, you know, the relevant facts, you know, the first warrant, as Judge Smith pointed out, was June 30th, the second is July 15th, and the two instances of drug dealing were on the 28th of April and the 24th. You know, that just seems to be very close in time So for me, I just don't see it being that stale, but you know, that's me. So why am I wrong?
Staleness.
And also in Myers, it was, you know, some CR, you know, says somewhere there was a drug house, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas here, you know, based on evidence of automotive drug dealing, you know, concrete with this car on April 28th and 24th, I just see that as being less of a tenuous tie to events. Well, less of a tenuous tie here than it was in Meyer.
So. I think what is shown in the search warrant, though, is that the tie is tenuous, is that there's now no longer any evidence. As Your Honor said, it may be fair to conclude that Mr. Campbell's on the run. There's no evidence that he remains in Ramsey County. There's no evidence that he is continuing to use these cars for the purposes of his drug dealing operation. The fact is that when the officer approaches the court with facts that he knows are stale, knowing that he needs to apply again for a warrant, and he approaches the court saying, I haven't seen this person for 2 weeks. I haven't seen these cars for 2 weeks. I can't even tell you if this person or these cars remain in Ramsey County. It just compounds the legislative intent of causing a warrant to go stale after 10 days. That after 10 days, people can leave people can leave the county, people can dispossess themselves of things, and the burden remains on the government to prove probable cause.
I got it.
Yep. So, counsel, let me ask you, if you put this in your briefs, I apologize for missing it. Is this a situation where you've asked for statutory interpretation, you have a specific test you're proposing to the court? Is it one where you think this needs to be released in a precedential opinion?
I think it does. I think it's unclear right now what sort of what test would be required to differentiate an improper extension from a request for a second warrant.
I was going to ask you about your test, yep. Because it sounds to me like your test is very focused on the statutory version of staleness, but there is a case law version of staleness as well, right?
Yes, and the case law version of staleness applies to a warrant that is executed within 10 days of its issuance, but is nonetheless supported by facts that at the time of the issuance were stale. My test deals with a warrant that may have at once been supported by facts that were fresh, that caused a warrant to issue, that then was not executed within 10 days and has therefore gone stale by virtue of the statute. In that situation, because the legislature has clearly said, we don't grant extensions for any sorts of warrants other than financial institutions, it then becomes incumbent upon the state to meet a very minimal burden of showing to the issuing judge that within the past 10 days, we have double checked, found some sort of new information to indicate that the facts pled in the original application remain fresh. That's not what was done here.
And I think I do understand your argument. I guess my question for you is a matter, again, talking in terms of potentially a precedential opinion in that interpret statute. It sounds to me as though your test is adding language to the statute. There is clearly this 10-day prohibition or expiration of a warrant. I don't debate that. It's adding this test, as you said, this requirement of submitting new facts that I don't see on the language of the statute, and I'm trying to understand.
I think it,
you know, you have strong public policy arguments for it, but this isn't the legislature, so.
I understand that. I think, but we do recognize that sometimes certain requirements are created by implication, and so we're then left to ask ourselves, why is it that there is one way to obtain an extension for warrants for financial institutions and another way to obtain an extension of a warrant for a car, for a house, et cetera, et cetera. And then, so why does that exist? And then why would there, that's basically my point. If there are no other questions, I'll yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. You will have time for rebuttal. We'll now hear counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Ragatz. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent respondent state of Minnesota in this matter. There are two issues before this court today, statutory staleness and factual staleness. I'll start with the frivolous argument, statutory staleness. I've got the statute here in front of me. It's quite short. All it says is after 10 days, you have to get a new warrant if it isn't a financial crime. That's exactly what happened here. They didn't just extend the warrant. They applied for a new warrant. They submitted the exact same information they would have if there hadn't been a warrant in the first place. It was a different judge who looked at the second warrant application. Judge Castro the first time, Judge Yang the second time. So all this talk of extensions is really irrelevant. This isn't an extension case. The second judge had to look at this application the same as he or she would have if there hadn't been a first warrant. Judge Yang obviously did not find anything stale in this warrant, and so he signed it. There's nothing in the plain language of the statute that even hints at a requirement of adding new facts every 10 days. I mean, Judge Starr got this right. What Judge Starr said in her order is, the essence of the 10-day rule is to have warrants be consistently reevaluated for staleness. The rule does not exist as a way to invalidate probable cause if investigators can't come up with new facts every 10 days. So Judge Starr got that exactly right. And it would be quite a burden if every 10 days you had to come up with new facts just because there was an earlier warrant. It's just illogical. Certainly, if this was the legislature's requirement or intent, there'd be something in the legislative history indicating that, but appellant hasn't cited any legislative history. Really, all appellant cited here is the Myers case. And I've read that numerous times trying to figure out the reliance here, because Myers doesn't say Section 626.15 creates a new facts or refreshing the warrant requirement. Myers just says the warrant expired under 626.15 and the new warrant was based on stale information. So that's just analysis of the particular facts of that case. It doesn't create some sort of new requirement. I mean, it's a 20-year-old non-precedential decision. No one's ever cited it as creating a new requirement that isn't in the language of the statute or apparently in the legislative history. So the statutory staleness argument, really, there's nothing to it. A judge looked at this, found it wasn't stale. Again, it was a different judge. And the only real question is, are the facts here stale? There's no reason the police should be penalized for the fact that they got another warrant earlier and couldn't find the person. Now, the problem with this factual staleness argument is, first of all, that it was forfeited below. If you look at page 2 of the memo that appellant cited below, all he argues is staleness is a matter of law. He never argues, regardless of the first warrant, the facts here are stale. He never makes the argument, never made the arguments below that he makes now, that somehow there's a requirement to refresh the location of a car, the ownership of a car. So first of all, those arguments were forfeited because they clearly were not made below. Again, look at his memo below. Turning to the merits, though, the only case that appellant cites in support of his argument is Pseudo. That was actually my case. It's a case that involves a lack of nexus to an apartment, and more importantly, it involves information that was 10 months old, much like the Myers case involved information that was 10 or 11 months old. It's just different than the facts here. Here we have evidence of ongoing drug dealing. Three different judges found that. Judge Castro on the first warrant, Judge Yang on the second warrant, Judge Starr on the motion to suppress. You've got a drug deal that ends up with someone dead, and then less than 2 months later, you've got very suspicious driving activity, which isn't just somebody's lost in the neighborhood, they took a wrong turn maybe. If you look at Judge Starr's order, it repeats the information there of the information, the driving that is highly suspicious. So that's ongoing activity. And the case law says where you have ongoing activity, staleness may not occur for months, especially when you're looking for items of ongoing utility. Judge Starr correctly points out both of those lines of case law. And here, if you look at the actual warrant, it was authorizing searches for things like cellular phones, drug paraphernalia for packaging, et cetera, addresses and telephone books, financial records. So we're not just looking for some meth that might be long gone or a couple $100 you got from a drug deal that's probably long spent. We have evidence of ongoing drug dealing here, and we're looking for items of enduring utility. And it's important to remember here that this is not de novo review by this court. The case law is quite clear. You defer to the issuing judge, or in this case, the issuing judges, and all you need is a fair probability, which isn't even like a 51% chance, according to the case law. You just need a fair probability you'll find evidence of crime. You have that here, as judges Castro, Yang, and Starr all found, based on the ongoing drug dealing and the items sought of enduring utility. Now, appellant is arguing before this court for the first time, he didn't below, that you have to prove the car was in Ramsey County. I don't see any case law support for that. If the car never comes back to Ramsey County, it's never going to get searched. But there's no requirement that you have to prove when the warrant is issued that the car, which is obviously mobile, is currently in Ramsey County or is likely to soon be in Ramsey County. You don't have to refresh the ownership of a car because 21 days have passed. No case law even hints at anything like that. We're not talking, again, about 10 or 11 months, as in the Pseudo and Myers cases, which are really the only cases that have been cited by appellant. So I think those are the main points I wanted to make today. I will talk about another possible outcome, but if the court has any questions. The one point I do want to clarify in my brief is the state made an alternative argument below, which is even if this warrant was invalid, they had probable cause to arrest him based on the drug deal on video where the person ended up dead. And so when you have probable cause to arrest, you don't need a search warrant for the person's body or for their car under the automobile exception. And they found drugs right on his person and in the car all around him. So that's an alternative argument. It's not an argument the state's making for the first time in appeal. Judge Starr just said, I don't need to reach that. And so if this court felt that the warrant was improper, it could remand and should remand for findings and an argument on that alternative ground of probable cause to arrest and a search incident to arrest and search incident to the automobile exception. But there's absolutely no basis for adding language to 626.15 to create a new facts rule. 626.15 just requires a new warrant after 10 days. That's what the police did here, not an extension. They got a brand new warrant. And even if you get to the forfeited factual staleness issue, there is no case law that even hints at ongoing drug dealing like this being not enough under a staleness test.
So, counsel, you called the statutory argument that appellant is raising frivolous. So that means you don't think precedential opinion is necessary, I assume.
Right. Just there's nothing in the plain language that even hints at anything like that. It just says after 10 days, you have to get a new warrant. And that's what they did here. And what that means is every 10 days or whatever, a new judge or a judge will have to reassess staleness, which is what happened here. So there isn't any danger here of warrants being extended into perpetuity, because every time you have to apply again, a judge is going to have to assess it for staleness. Yeah, and obviously at some point it will become stale.
But it seems that the parties are at least the district court turned to the Myers opinion. And I appreciate we've all been arguing about how applicable it is to the facts of the case, but in terms of the analysis of Myers and the analysis of the statute on staleness, you know, if we're turning to non-precedential opinions to figure this case out, is it time for a precedential opinion? Is that argument truly frivolous?
Well, I think the problem is Myers doesn't say that 626.15 creates a new facts rule or a refresh the facts rule. I think
I'm not saying that. Appellant's argument either. Yeah. Appellant derives it from the statute.
Right.
But all talked about the factual distinction about Myers, but that the statutory analysis in Myers is apparently not something that you quibble with. And so I'm just asking, is it time to state something plainly?
I guess it couldn't hurt, Your Honor. I don't think it's necessary because no one before this that I'm aware of has ever made an argument that Myers stands for the proposition that 626.15 creates this new rule. And Myers doesn't say anything like that. It just observes that under 626.15, the warrant went bad and then the new warrant wasn't any good under those facts. But if there is confusion out there, it could be perhaps cleared up with a precedential opinion. I think the language here is so plain and so short, and there's no legislative history again, that there really isn't anything to that argument. And unless this court has additional questions, I will relinquish my remaining 5 minutes.
Thank you. Counsel for the respondent, you'll have the, or for the appellant, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you. Not to hammer on Myers too much, but Myers does explicitly cite the statute, and it does uphold a district court ruling that found that the second warrant was, and I do quote, an improper extension of the first. And in the state's entire argument, I did not hear any ability to distinguish or to define what an extension is and what differentiates an extension from a reapplication for a warrant on facts that are that supported a warrant that has gone void by the by function of the statute. That's where this,
to me, that one difference is right there in the statute, which is I just took it away again, but you know, for the extension, all it specifically says what the state has to put in for an extension, which is that the financial institution just hasn't gotten back to them yet. That's it. So, you know, getting a new warrant seems on its face even different from what an extension is described as being.
But then we're left with the question of why did the legislature create a way to get an extension of warrants for financial institutions, but no way to get an extension for warrants on on residences, cars, containers, et cetera.
They got a new warrant. They didn't get an extension. I mean, this is apples and oranges, isn't it, counsel?
I think that this is just playing with the name of the document that you're getting from the court. Whether you call it an extension or call it a warrant, they're both supported by the same facts, and they're both supported by facts that have gone void pursuant to the statute.
Well, I think an extension is financial institutions are slower sometimes. I mean, that's how I read that statute, is they give them extra time and they permit extension.
I think that that's part of it. I also think it's incredibly true, as I said earlier, that if you continue to grant a warrant extend a warrant for financial institutions, there's no risk that my financial records are going to all of a sudden become counsel for the state's financial records. There is a risk that by continuing to issue warrants, when you say you haven't been able to locate a car, you haven't been able to confirm where a person is, where they're residing, that you end up issuing new warrants for cars that are now owned by somebody else, residents that are now resided in by somebody else, and that threatens the privacy and property interests of law-abiding citizens.
Now, let's say for the sake of argument that the car is now registered in my name, but the car is still being driven by the appellant to deal drugs. Who cares? I mean, if the car is still being used to sell drugs, who cares whether it's registered in my name, Judge Smith's name, or your client's name?
The issue isn't
the fact that now it's all different now because, by God, because now it's registered in her name, no one's going to use that car now to sell drugs.
Well, the issue is that would tend to suggest that if there's no link to the person to whom the car is now registered to, that would tend to suggest that the car may no longer be used to sell drugs. It would tend to suggest that things have changed, that someone's moved, that they've sold it, and that the person who someone shouldn't be able to, people should be able to purchase cars and to move without worry. And I mean, I think I'm kind of getting into the weeds here, but without worrying that law enforcement has the authority to search them based on information that's weeks and months old that they haven't followed up on. There should be some explanation why within 10 days we haven't been able to locate this car. I mean, that's.
I got it.
No. And if there's no more questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. We will issue our decision within 90 days.